Well, this is very exciting, isn't it?
Mm. Is it?
Not only is this our first brand new episode celebrating a milestone going out to all listeners on release day for, I think, over a year, Will. But after 5.5 years, we're finally talking about them. One of Britain's most iconic four-piece bands, Blue, finally on Track by Track.
No, Dan, I think there was a typo on the shared note that we have. I think you'll find it's Blur.
You are joking.
No, I hope you've been listening to and researching for Blur Park Life and not Blue One Love.
I specifically took the day off work today to watch Blue on this morning talking about their upcoming theatre tour. I had to listen to Lee ramble on. We're not doing Blue. Are you serious?
We're not doing Blue. You haven't been watching your DVD, Blue Live and Uncensored in Concert, have you?
Yes. Yeah, All yes, Rise. You
know, yeah, yeah.
And I have, and I did.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Right. Well, so I'm not doing Blue.
No, we're not doing Blue. We're doing Blur. This is a very exciting moment because we are talking about Blur for the first time on Track by Track today.
Hello. You're listening to Track by Track with me, Dan.
And me, Will. This is the podcast where we take a great pop music album and break it down, track by track.
Yes, we get up when we want, except on Tuesdays when we're rudely awoken by demands for a new episode. Pod life.
Aww,
you see what I did there, Will?
You had been preparing, really,
Pod
haven't
life.
You?
Pod life. Yeah.
And Dan, I've got one word for you. No, or is it two words? I don't know. Britpop.
Britpop. There's going to be a lot of Britpop.
And this is the start of it. The seeds of it were here. Such an exciting time in the UK when Britpop emerged. And we're going to talk about Blur. But, you know, alongside Blur, right at this moment, also coming about, Oasis was starting out. But then you also had the like of Pulp, Elastica, Supergrass.
Suede.
Ocean Colour Scene, Mansund, Sleeper.
The Verve,
maybe a bit later on. But yeah, The Verve were there as well. But what I love about Blur is they were right there from the inception.
They were. And what's great, actually, is that this is their third album released in 1994. We're talking about it this week because it's just turned 30. This was their third album, but this was the one that really put them on the map, wasn't it?
It really put them on the map, but also it was definitely a make or break moment as well with this third album. I think the first two albums hadn't necessarily set the world on fire, although they had their fans and they have definitely have their place in the pop music canon and in the Blur back catalogue, some standout moments in there. But I think going into the recording studio for a third time proper, there was definitely an expectation that this would be it. This would be the moment. This would be the turning point for Blur into a huge band. No pressure. No pressure on Damon and the boys to write and record some fantastic songs. And thank God for that. It was actually what came about to be their defining moment.
It really was. What I think is even more impressive about this is the fact that it arrived less than a year after their second album, Modern Life is Rubbish. And as you said, it's because they had to do this, not only for their career and for the longevity of their career and to prove something, but also because they were in quite a lot of debt. So they had to tour America and they had to get the next album out because Modern Life is Rubbish stalled at number 15. The three singles from it, which were For Tomorrow, Chemical World and Sunday, peaked at 28, 28 and 26, respectively.
Your vital statistics, you wish.
But also another reason, Will, of course, as you said right at the start, it was just like 4 or 5 years later, we were oversaturated with girl bands. Around this time, 1994, we were becoming, I don't know if oversaturated is the right word, actually, because there was so much talent that you mentioned before, but there were more and more and more indie bands, Britpop bands coming through. They had to establish themselves.
And yeah, Blur were right there at the start of it all. And were very much the beating earnest heart of it all as well. Like you said, they were very much a real band. Four guys, four friends come together, very much had the DNA of the UK in their music. And that's definitely what they tapped into for this album as well. And there's definite, we will talk about some influences, some comparisons to similar artists at the same time. Not the obvious Blur versus Oasis, because I think you'll agree, Dan, they're very different beasts. Despite the fact that they're often pitched as rivals to each other, I think very different things from the music. And that's why you could enjoy both. I remember I was in my early teens at the time, just getting into music. So the emergence of Britpop was a big part of my formative musical years. And, you know, such was my love of pop music and great music from a young age. I wasn't just about the girl bands and the dance music and the pop music. I really did appreciate Britpop when it was around as well. We've talked before on Track by Track. I was a huge fan of Sleeper. Manson were around at the time. I loved them. Really enjoyed tracks from so many of the artists that we'd referenced earlier on already. And the thing with this album was, it was just the time for Blur to come of age, but also it was the time for this music.
And as you said, I was actually interested to ask you, Will, about your memories of Britpop, because knowing that you love pop and dance arguably predominantly, I knew you were a Blur fan, I knew you wanted to do this album, but can you remember first hearing Girls and Boys? Because that obviously was them moving more towards a pop dance sound.
Yeah, I think it was probably like some, I mean, my memory's hazy now. I'm not a spring chicken anymore, Dan, as you often tell me, like my mother does. But I think it was probably on like watching like The Word on Channel 4 late before Mum and Dad got back from the pub, and they were probably on there doing a raucous performance of it. Girls and Boys, such a huge turning point in the public awareness for Blur, and it was definitely one of those songs that was everywhere, as were many of the tracks off this album. And, you know, and then Park Life came, and then it was just boom, everywhere.
Yeah. I hope you got a bit of Eurotrash before they got home from the pub as well, by the way. Now, Will, before we get stuck into the album proper and any more Blur chat, and I imagine there'll be a little bit more Blur chat today, this, as I said, is our first brand new album episode for quite a while, and our first on all podcasting platforms for maybe a little bit longer. We did say we'd love to read out some of the very generous reviews we've received on Apple Podcasts. We did ask for some more, hands up. We did say, beg, please give us a review. And the lovely listeners have indulged us, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we're definitely coming back after a reasonably long hiatus. We definitely wanted to hear from listeners and fans and music enthusiasts. So, yeah, really good. Keep them coming, by the way, on Apple Podcasts or at Track by Track on our social media. This fantastic from Meatless in Seattle. As a Brit expat in the US, I'm naturally a bit out of sync with what's going on back home. The pod has introduced me to as many bands I'd otherwise previously not come across, like Everything Everything. Also, good to hear another set of ears on some of my existing favourite bands like Duran Duran and New Order. Keep up the good work. Carry on podcasting, indeed. Ah, yes. Thank you.
That is lovely. Another one here from SK881, who says, love it. That's the title, Will. Loveit.com. 5 stars. Track by Track is fantastic. I love learning about more great pop albums, and their creators, Dan and Will, are fantastic hosts, and their down-to-earth cheeky banter makes it feel like you're listening to your mates talk about the music they are passionate about. 10 out of 10.
And last one for now from Jimmy James 344. Funny and informative, but mostly funny. Not sure everyone agrees with you, but thank you. make a playlist out of every song they mention and you end up with some classics, some excellent new stuff, some obscure but brilliant remixes, and inevitably I Know Him So Well by Barbara Dixon and The Little Fella. Great to have you back, boys.
Brought a tear to my eye.
But that's enough about your Little Fella, Dan. Dan, I know what you're thinking though. Who the hell are Blur?
I was wondering.
Okay, so it is Lee Ryan, Anthony Costa, Duncan James and Simon...
No, you've done it now. The typo, it does it itself, doesn't it? Autocorrect. You're going to... What happened to the note?
Hopefully that's the last hilarious accident we'll have today. So, Blur, Damon Albarn, singer-songwriter extraordinaire. We love him in Blur. We love him Gorillaz. We love him doing the other stuff he does as well. Graham Coxon, guitarist. Alex James on guitar, bass guitar also. And Dave Rowntree, heir to the sweets and chocolate empire, no doubt. Drummer extraordinaire as well. Together they are Blur, formed in London back in 1988. Before Park Life, which we're going to go track by track through today, they released Leisure in 91, Modern Life is Rubbish in 1993, and have gone on to write and record together and separately so much other fantastic stuff. Dan, I know you're a fan of some of the recent Coxon work that's been coming out there, as well as The Good, The Bad and The Queen, which was the other Damon Albarn project that I couldn't remember the name of a minute ago.
I mean, that is the amazing thing about Blur, isn't it? They're four incredibly talented musicians that came together to form Blur. But and obviously worth noting, Blur still a thing as we speak. At time of recording, we've just had week two of Coachella, and Damon Albarn's told the crowd, this is, what did he say? In the spirit of clarity and truth, this is probably our last gig. Of course, he made the headlines because he was very unhappy with weekend one and how the crowd weren't singing along to Girls and Boys. But they released an album last year. It was number one. Barbaric from that was on our top 30 tracks of the year. But also Graham Coxon's project, The Wave, they were also in our top 30. And Dave Rowntree had an incredible album last year as well. And of course, Alex James, iconic tracks with Fat Les back in the day.
And Alex James, one of my favourite pop musicians' aging quotes that I've heard was from Alex James. And it was something like, he celebrated his 40th birthday with drugs, his 50th birthday with alcohol, and his 60th birthday with cheese.
Oh,
wonderful. I love the fact you haven't picked up on the fact that I got the date, the ages on that quote ridiculously wrong. So well done, Dan.
Are they not 60? Oh, no. No. Well, must be creeping up.
I think it was 20s, 30s and 40s. Which actually, having gone through full gamut of birthdays, I'd probably agree with him on.
You've just had your big four something, haven't you?
No comment. Don't like to talk about
Dinodors.
My age. Don't like to talk about my double Ds, double O's, double four O's. Now, we're talking about Park Life today, which was the third album. You said quite a few times already now. It was originally released on the 25th of April, 1994. It was Blur's third album and some great production caliber involved in this album.
Yes, we've got Stephen Street, who we've spoken about many, many times before. Of course, iconic work with The Smiths and with Morrissey on his solo stuff, but also New Order on the Waiting for the Sirens Call album that we've been track by track through, Sleepers, The It Girl, as you mentioned Sleeper there, but also Kaiser Chiefs and Ordinary Boys. And he worked with Blur from the second single, There's No Other Way, and then worked on Modern Life is Rubbish, this album, Part Life, The Great Escape, Blur, and then came back for 2015's The Magic Whip, and then also worked on albums by Kaiser Chiefs and Ordinary Boys. But, Will, you've also got on one track on here, a friend of the podcast, Stephen Haig.
Haigy. Hey up, lad. Up the Haig. Yeah. So this is quite a long album, so we should better get stuck in.
Let's do it with side one, track one, Golden Boys.
Kicking off with a huge one there, Girls and Boys. Blur will forever be known as this being one of their biggest songs, if that makes any grammatical sense whatsoever. Apologies. Such is my excitement to talk about this song. There's a bit of history to it as well, actually, because it was one of those songs that they recorded and they were just so sure of, this is a hit. This needs to be released. This needs to be our first single. at this point in Blur's early career, the record company and certain people at the label were very keen to sign off on any tracks that were going to be recorded for the album. However, the band was so sure about this track, they just went and did it and then took it to the record label, who were pretty unhappy at first that they'd just gone away and done it. But once it was played, once it was absorbed, digested, it was very much agreed that this had a hit song written all over it. And thank God that they had recorded it. Sometimes, Dan, you can't beat around the bush. You've just got to take a chance when you know it feels right.
And yeah, just maybe, let the creatives do their thing and let the men in suits just sit back and sign the contracts and keep their bloody noses out. How about that?
But what a massive song. What an instant song. What a change of pace, doing almost an all-out dance anthem of a track for the first release from this new Make or Break album moment.
Yeah, and I guess they had to do something different, didn't they? Because as we said, the previous album's three singles were all, none of them made it into the top 20. So they had to do something different, and they really did do it. It is an indie anthem, but it's also heavily influenced by Eurodance and the early 90s and the rave scene. And I think, as you said right at the start, we think of, or not us, Will, we're better than this, but a lot of people think of Blur versus Oasis, Britpop, indie guitars. But this has been likened to Duran Duran by Alex James himself, who says that's where the bassline inspiration came from.
Oh, you got your mention in. Oh, another mention.
Yeah, who of course remixed the track and played it. They covered it on their Discovery tour. But reviewers were also liking it to Sparks and to Giorgio Moroder and to so many others. The word disco getting thrown around. And, you know, everyone's correct. It is all of those things and more. But it's also very Blur.
Well, yeah, and actually, one, like all of the acts you just mentioned, another thing which is very much a Blur thing is not being pigeonholed into a particular genre. So although we say Britpop, we say indie, rock, it's actually, just on this album alone, so many different styles experimented with and played around with. And they would go on to move between different styles and approaches through their career. So actually, although you might, you know, sit up and think, what on earth's going on with this for Blur, third album? No, it's perfectly part and parcel with how they, you know, approach an experiment with music. I love that surety of them knowing when they've got a big song on their hands. Can say the same for Parklife when we get to it as well. It's like they know we've got these big songs on this album, and actually we want to put them out there, even if it is different.
Also, Will, worth noting, we've talked about who the producers are on the album. All lyrics are by Damon, unless I say otherwise, and all music by Damon, Graham, Alex, and Dave. However, this is a bit of an oddity in the band's canon, at least at this point, because Dave's not playing drums. They're actually using a drum machine.
And famously inspired by a holiday that Damon went with Justine, his girlfriend, lead singer of Elastica, to Magaluf. And actually, when you hear the lyrics of this song, and the video is also very much leaning into this, it is about the lads' holiday, the girls' holiday. The Club 1830, I guess, was a huge thing back in the 90s. If you remember all those programs, Club Reps and Ibiza Uncovered and all of that. People with their organs hanging out of their clothes, drinking and drinking and drinking. How is your mother? No, sorry. I didn't want to do that today.
The video, though, you spoke about, Will, that was directed by Kevin Godley. We've spoken about him before as part of Godley and Cream. He directed lots of iconic music videos, most notably for us, Duran Duran's Girls on Film.
And there were lots of
girls. Mentions.
There were lots of girls on film in that video as well. I've got to mention the single artwork, which I think is a more tasteful spin on a girl and a boy on holiday, although I'm trying to work out if they're in the nip or not.
That image did come from a pack of Durex condoms, so potentially.
Oh, and actually, the font for girls and boys, the text on there is, I believe, the Durex font as well. Dan, can you just grab a packet out of your drawer there and just hold it up to the camera?
But I've actually got my special edition JLS ones, which I was going to talk about. What Blue handing the baton to them as they pop R&B boy band, and I was going to had all this thing prepared, but never mind.
Extra strength.
Extra small.
Safer that way. You like it to be as numb as possible. We're definitely back to Carry On Podcasting again. Some people will be pleased to hear.
Now, Will, this was a single. This was the lead single. We've not had any chart chat for a while. Would you like some?
Oh, I love it. Go on.
So let me transport you back to March of 1994, just over 30 years ago. This, the lead single from the third album, as we said, the previous album had no top 20 singles, but this one entered the charts at number 5 and then hung around the top 40 for a few weeks, actually. Elsewhere in the top 10 that week, oh, I've been looking forward to doing this, Will. Number 10, Tony Braxton with Breathe Again. Number 9, Reel to Reel featuring Mad Stuntman with Like to Move It. This one, I Like to Move It. Maybe it's just Like to Move It. 8, Enigma with Return to Innocence. 7, a new entry for Tori Amos with Pretty Good Year. 6 is M People with Renaissance. Might be mentioning them again later, Will. 5, that new entry for Blur, Girls and Boys. 4, a new entry for Bruce Springsteen with Streets of Philadelphia. 3 is Ace of Base and The Sign. 2, Mariah Carey, Without You. And at number 1, moving up 2 places, it's Dupe and Dupe.
I used to love that Dupe song. Ridiculous, but so many. And how does that? How did that reel to reel song go?
Was it I Like to Move It, Move It? Was that them?
How does it go?
A different one. I'm not warmed up, Will. I'm not lubed up. But I have got my JLS special edition lube here, actually. So I could be.
Dan, you didn't fall into my trap where I was going to make you sing it and then put a karaoke backing track underneath in the final edit. But we've been doing this too long now.
Yeah. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not falling for your traps, Will. But as we said, what a way to kick this off. It's transported us. It's the early 90s. We're two young Londoners. We're on a club 18 to 30s holiday. And Will, I think that's your mate Tracy Jacks over there. Maybe he could keep the mood up for us.
Let's go and check in with him, Tracy Love, and hear what he's got to say, because I think he's a real live wire. It's track 2. It's Tracy Jacks.
So, not looking too peaky for poor Tracy Love, but I really, really love the layout of this song. And I don't think that's something I've really said before, the layout of a song, but just that chanting of his name and that list of what's going wrong for him. I'm sorry to take so much pleasure from that, Tracy, but it's a great format for a song.
It is. And this is our first taste of some real character studies, I think. And part of Damon's writing, part of all Barnes' writing is very much rooted in the character studies. But
I think I've just changed the dial. I think I've got those two from The Rest Is History on my airwaves.
Great podcast. It is. He's, you know, telling stories on this album rooted in British life. And I just... this isn't the first time I'm going to say the name St. Etienne to you, because I think they're also fantastic at it. And there are definitely some songs that have even closer DNA to some St. Etienne tracks. But I love this very kind of Britishness in the album, because, I mean, Tracy Jacks, he's a very unhappy civil servant and his life is falling apart. And I think he's going to do something he might regret, even if he does feel like it's the only option.
Yeah, and not the first time that theme's going to come up on the album either. But character study is great. I didn't really think about it as that, but it definitely is, and there's more of that on the album.
Pet Shop Boys do it really well as well, actually. Sorry, just to that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Pet Shop Boys and St. Etienne definitely bedfellows, aren't they? And yeah, you'd put Blur. I think Blur take influence from both of those, but don't do it like quite like they do it. You're just given such a picture of this person. You feel like you know them.
The other thing I like about it is, like, when I listen to this album now, it just reminds me of playing the cassette when I was 14 or so. 13. And the order of tracks is so familiar, because obviously now we can skip and pause and rewind. Actually, you could do that on a tape. No, but you know what I mean? It was much more like you would listen to it through, but now you can skip tracks or go back and repeat. But I remember the order of, like, Girls and Boys finishing and then the guitars kicking in with this track. And similarly to when we get through End of a Century in a minute and Park Life, when that kicks in. And then when Bank Holiday riles in and really rails us big time. It's just so reminiscent of growing up and knowing this album so well. And it's funny, isn't it? Now I appreciate the characterization, the stories and the background on some of the songs more than I ever did when I was 13, but still love the music both times.
And I think there's definitely something in the fact of loving a song. You can love a song for many, many, many years and you can have known it. It can be part of the soundtrack of your life. You can have sung along to it. But actually, did you ever really study the lyrics and did you ever really get what it was about? That's happened to me on many occasions and it's all come to light when getting ready for the podcast. This probably one of those. But what I love about this as the second song is that Girls and Boys, obviously a real different sound for Blur. And then this... probably what people were expecting, that kind of more indie guitar-y sound, but still they do it so well. And also those strings on this really add a different flourish to what you'd get from the standard indie fodder. No names mentioned whatsoever. And well, this was a single, but only in the US, so no chart chat for this one. However, it is a live favorite. It's often on the set lists. I think every time I've seen Blur 3 or 4 times, and I think it's always been on the set list. And I love it when a band has a song in their back catalogue that wasn't a single that they just always play live. I think Flutes from Hot Chip, if I'm not mistaken, that wasn't a single, or certainly wasn't a single proper. They always have that on the set list.
We can do the full 7 minutes.
Can we? Your Silent Face from New Order, another example. And of course, This Is a Low, coming later in the album, another fine example of that.
Yeah, it just begs to be sung along to, doesn't it? It's brilliant.
With that repetition of Tracy Jacks. And my favourite lyric from this, I think, Will, is, I'd love to stay here and be normal, but it's just so overrated. I was going to get that tattooed on me as my favourite Blur lyric, but I actually went for Got Morning Glory and Life's a Different Story, Everything's Going Jack and Ori from Country House instead.
Across Your Shoulders. Yeah. It's dead classy, actually.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. It's a shame they spelled country wrong, but other than that, it looks really good.
Can I just say something else? This song always makes you think of... Do you remember Reggie Perrin?
No.
The quite... bleak sitcom from the 70s on the BBC, which was with Leonard Rossiter from Rising Damp. It was latterly had a remake starring Martin Clunes.
Oh, so well, we could speak. I think we could do a whole episode on every song so far, but we can't. We've got to move on. And track three is End of a Century. We all say, don't want to feel alone. We wear the same clothes, can't we feel the same? And kiss the dry lips when we say.
End of a Century there, the third track on the album. This is my second favourite Britpop song with Century in the title. And if you've listened to our Sleeper episode, you'll know what my favourite is.
Sail of the Century. Just for anyone who hasn't listened to it yet. Oh, well, do you know what, actually? I'd love to exclusively reveal on this episode... Did I slur my words then? I'm not drinking. I would love to exclusively reveal on this episode that that is one of the... Track by Track episodes that was a Patreon exclusive that's coming to all listeners later this year.
With additional content, deluxe version. End of a Century, though. I love the sort of melancholic, almost like End of a Century, almost a bit apocalyptic, slightly low-key apocalyptic. Oh, that's a good phrase, if I do say so myself, of this. And a story as old as time itself, isn't it? A couple who, as time passes, become more comfortable and used to kind of staying at home and watching the telly, sex on the TV, everyone's at it. But Dan, what do you think of this track?
Oh, I love this song. I love the great juxtaposition to the woozy vintage synth opener and then that jangly, there's that word, I said I'd say it. It's very kind of, again, more what people might be expecting, standard indie. And also those opening lines are so intriguing. She says there's ants in the carpet, dirty little monsters, eating all the morsels, picking up the rubbish. And that is based on a true story of Damon and Justine sharing a house, and they had an ant infestation.
They were riddled by all accounts, but easy enough now. You just get some of that powder, don't you, from the shop?
Oh, yeah, from Wilco's. Oh, is it gone? No, is it back?
Well, it's around some in some places, but I'm sure you could get it from a local supermarket now.
But lyrically, and tonally, it's very British storytelling, isn't it? And it's the Kinks, Madness, all of these other influences.
Victoria Wood,
as we said before. Victoria Wood, yeah, kitchen sink dramas. I found with Blur, they're a little bit mod, like Kinks and Madness, but they're also very arty, like Pulp, who of course were doing it a little bit before them. And I love that with this song, this whole idea of this very kind of shrug of the shoulders of end of a century, you know, nothing special, following on from that idea of that whole album, Modern Life is Rubbish. It's just like they're just not impressed with anything. And I have to say that when I thought about that more today, I kind of thought, I looked at the Modern Life is Rubbish front cover and that steam train, and I thought, oh, actually, I just got it. Maybe everyone else got it before, but it's this idea that people now will say Modern Life is Rubbish, but people 100 years ago would have said Modern Life is Rubbish. And people in 100 years' time will say Modern Life is Rubbish. It kind of just dawned on me that they weren't necessarily just talking about their modern life. It was maybe that's what we all think.
That's a great point. Good, isn't it? It's a great point, actually, Dan. I was just thinking about kind of where they kind of sit. And I think they occupied an interesting space at the time of being not like mods or rockers, but being a bit like kind of art school lads, but a bit of like the cool lads behind the bike sheds as well. Sort of people that if you saw them in the student union, you would fancy them a bit, but more often than not, go up to them to try and bum a cigarette off them.
Yeah, you definitely try and bum one.
Damon.
But
No. Couldn't choose. But Damon was gorgeous back in the day. And he still is a handsome man, even now.
Yeah, he is still a very attractive man. And when I see him on stage with Gorillaz or Blur or whichever one of his many bands he's performing with, it's the confidence, it's the swagger. He has got it still.
This track was also a single.
Yes, so this was the fourth and final single from the album. A top 20 hit, Will, you'll be pleased to hear. This entered at number 19 in November of 94. So sort of their early Christmas single, you could say.
That's a stretch.
Even for me. In fact, Will, there's so much going on in the charts for this week. I wasn't planning to do this, but there's so many new entries, I'm going to have to. Here's the top 20. So 20, The Beautiful South with One Last Love Song. 19, a new entry for Blur with End of a Century. 18, a new entry for Suede with The Wild Ones. Blur would have been pissed off with that, I think. 17, a new entry for Jamiroquai with Half the Man. 16 is Snap featuring Summer with Welcome to Tomorrow. 15, Ultimate Chaos with Some Girls. 14, Warren G, This DJ. 13, Tom Jones, If Only I Knew. If Only I Knew. 12, Louis Armstrong. No, as I recently found out, Louis Armstrong. We Have All the Time in the World. 11, Michelle Gale, Sweetness. 10, Wakefield, Saturday Night. 9 is a new entry for New Order with True Faith, 94. 8, M People Are Back with a new entry, Sight for Sore Eyes. 7, R. Kelly, She's Got That Vibe. 6, Eternal, Oh Baby I. Wow, two cancellations in one top 10 there. 5, Sheryl Crow, All I Want to Do. 4, Bon Jovi, Always. 3, Baby D, Let Me Be Your Fantasy, a new entry. 2, The Real McCoy with Another Night. And 1, Pato Banton, Baby Come Back. That is one hell of a top 20.
I can't believe it's even better than the first one you did. I can't believe how many absolute belters are in that top 10. Real McCoy, Another Night, that was a huge dance song. M People were, you forget M People sometimes, and we've not done them on Track by Track, but that was one of their best for me as well. Snap as well. Eternal, back in the day, very enjoyable.
And I have to say, a lot of those and a lot of the rest of the top 40, because number 21 is Cyndi Lauper's re-recording of Girls Just Want to Have Fun, which we spoke about last year on Patreon. It'll be coming to all podcasting platforms at some point. A lot of them are Now 29, which is the first Now album that I got. And I still sometimes just go back to that because it's such a good one. But the interesting thing with this, Will, it was the fourth single. It was a top 20 hit. But Damon did say that he thought This Is a Low could have been a better alternative for the fourth single. And I'm inclined to
agree. I do enjoy that one.
Oh, actually, yeah, I've just said that. That's one of my favourites on the album. Spoiler alert. But this was a great single, so I'm stuck. And the video for this one, Will, filmed at Ali Pali. God bless them for making that trek.
Oh, and they probably, at that point, they probably had to get the bus up, like everyone else.
God, it's miles away, isn't it?
You would do the Lord's work if you make the trek up there to a gig.
Most people listening to this thinking, spoiled city boys, spoiled Londoners, an incredible venue, just the other side of the city, and they're whinging about it.
Well, we could only dream of a venue like that in Bristol. Okay, so track four now. We couldn't wait any longer because it's the next track. Park.
You should cut down on your pork life, mate. Get some exercise.
So Park Life there, Will, I'm going to do something controversial here. There's so much to say about this song, but I want to talk about the video first and foremost, because the fact I read about the video today blew my mind. Do you know what I'm going to say?
Well, I don't know what you're going to say, but say it and I'll tell you if I thought that's what you were going to say.
Well, you know when you come here to record and we'll sometimes go for a pub lunch down the Pilot, just between me and the O2, 5-minute walk away, and there's a row of terraces next to it. That's where they filmed it. That's where they filmed the video.
I didn't know you were going to say that. That is one of the best facts I've heard on this bloody podcast in the last 5 years. Finally, we get something good.
Very personal to me, and you. But still, it blew my mind that one of the most iconic Britpop videos filmed 5 minutes down the road from me.
And one of the most iconic Britpop songs as well. Again, another one that was recorded and for the band, was instant. They knew it was a hit. They didn't always... It was originally, I believe, sung by Damon or narrated by Damon. Didn't quite work. And I think they had Phil Daniels. Dan, you will know him as Kevin Wicks on EastEnders, amongst many, many acting credits. Some of our old listeners will remember him in Quadrophenia. I can't remember if he was the one that add it off with Leslie Ash up in back alley in Brighton or not, but that's just the sort of fact you would know, actually, Dan, so surprised you've not chimed in there.
No, I've not seen Quadrophenia, but I have seen EastEnders once or twice.
Great film, Quadrophenia. Phil Daniels, he was originally going to provide some form of vocals or narration for one of the later tracks on the album, The Debt Collector, which obviously didn't come to pass. But instead, he made Park Life. He really made it his own.
Yeah, he really did. Also, I love the fact that he hadn't heard of Blur when he was asked to do it, but he accepted it. He got the job done in 40 minutes, and then he was given the choice of an upfront fee or royalties, and he chose royalties. So probably the most profitable 40 minutes of his career. Well done, him.
He knew it had a hit written all over it, so he's still reaping the benefits of that even now.
Also, he said he's never really been sure what it's about, but Damon Albarn was on stage at Hyde Park in British Summertime, Hyde Park, when they played there in 2015, and he said it was, I mean, a lot of people knew this anyway, but it was about Hyde Park, him walking through Hyde Park, all the Park Life people that he saw, all the characters. I thought it was quite interesting nothing about cruisers in there, because that's my experience of the local park. From what I see, I mean, not getting involved.
You're a habitual voyeur, aren't you?
Well, a dogger without a car, is that what you mean?
Daddy likes to watch.
Wow, that's a soundbite for TikTok.
This, again, it's the quintessential my new tie.
You've got a new tie? Let's have a look.
Of a slice of British life, isn't it? And I think Phil Daniels really sums that up. He's like the reason why I think Phil Daniels is so loved is because he could be your best mate, he could be your brother, he could be your dad, he could be your uncle, he could be the man behind the bar in the pub, he could be your milkman, he could be your geography teacher. You know, he's every man to everyone. And always seems like a really nice guy.
He does, doesn't he? I think that's part of the charm. He just seems very down to earth.
I wouldn't want to cross him.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But I have been lucky enough to see him on stage. He often pops up when they do it live at the big shows. It's a bit like Lulu with Take That. It just pops up. It's not much of a surprise anymore, but it's still very enjoyable. And I think when I saw Blur at Glastonbury and when I saw them at Hyde Park, he was there. And he just gives it so much energy. He gives it 10 times more energy than he does on the recording. It's just euphoria. I suppose as well, maybe in a way it's him, he's taking on that role.
To be honest, it would be a nice surprise now if Lulu didn't turn up to sing Relight My Fire would take that when they perform it.
Well, she's retiring. She's on her last tour. And did you see last week, at time of recording, they flipped it with her. And she actually was surprised. She was going to perform her own version of Relight My Fire. And the three lads just popped up.
Park life. I wouldn't just say this was a big hit and a seminal moment for Blur. I would say culturally, in music, this was a seminal moment. And very much cemented Britpop as this British movement where British life is celebrated in a very guitar-driven, quirky way. And this song... I still love hearing it. I still don't tire of hearing it. I still tap my foot and bob my head, join in with some of the lyrics, park life and all that jazz.
Just those lyrics.
No, and some of the other lyrics as well.
You like some of the lyrics to Tracy Jacks as well, don't you? Tracy Jacks. I always thought this was a bigger hit than it was. It's a top 10 hit, but it entered at number 10. And then 4 weeks later, it dropped out the top 40. Now, this was single 3, and a lot of people were getting the album. The album was in the charts for 90 weeks, 90 consecutive weeks, I think. But yeah, this wasn't as big a hit. But then again, maybe more of an album band. Anyway, the top 10 that week, Will. This is September of 1994. Number 10, Blur, Park Life. 9 is Warren G and Nate Dogg with Regulate. 8, DJ Miko with What's Up. 7, All For One, I Swear. 6, a new entry for Boyz II Men, I'll Make Love To You. 5 is China Black with Searching. 4, Yuso Ndour featuring Naina Cherry with 7 Seconds. 3, Let Loose, Crazy For You. 2, Red Dragon with Brian and Tony, Compliments On Your Kiss. And number 1, I think for the last week of their 16-week run, Wet, 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 Love Is All Around. Sorry, it's their second to last week of their run of their 14 weeks at number 1, sorry.
Penultimate. The single artwork, again, fantastic. It's like a beer mat with a pint of bitter on it.
Yes, this might be my favourite from this campaign. I love it. Once again, quintessentially British.
Also, we haven't talked about some of the fantastic B-sides on some of the singles we've already talked about, but there's a great one on here, which is a theme from an imaginary film.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that one, Will, because... spoiler, it's not going to be one of our further listening choices, and mine was very nearly that one. It was also very nearly the one you chose.
I really love the way Park Life flows, is complemented by track 5, and it's a little burst of energy. This is Bank Holiday. Barbecue is cooking, sausage is chicken, neighbours they are looking.
Yeah. holiday there. I love just how energetic and raucous this one is. It's 1 minute, 42 seconds long. In fact, it's so fast-paced that Damon actually interrupts himself with each line.
Dan, question for you. Have you ever interrupted yourself?
I've tried many times. But despite the length, Will, of the song, I love that they still managed to get in verse, chorus, instrumental, chorus, and outro, all in 1 minute 42. Carnage. I love it.
I love it. It's one of my favourite songs on the album because it is just so wild. It's like a minute and a half of punk pop. And again, jamming in so many references to the bank holiday, as we know and love a bank holiday. I was just trying to think what I did on my last bank holiday. And I can't remember, but...
It would have been Easter Monday, love.
Easter Monday. I can't remember, even though it wasn't that long ago. But so many things are so true about barbecues and pints and neighbours and...
What TV show?
Oh, that was Park Life.
Ah. and of course, worth noting, we're just getting into peak, or in the middle of peak bank holiday season. We've had two at Easter. We've got two coming up next month in May. Also worth noting, with Jeremy Corbyn in power, we could have had four more. So something to think about there when you go to the polling booth in the past.
In the past. He's not around anymore. Dan, any plans for the next bank holiday?
Well, controversially, Will, so I've got so many trips planned this year, many with you, that actually in my line of work, Will, I have to take them as an annual leave day. So I think I'm just going to work them. Because I need to use my annual leave sparingly. How about you, Will?
Going on a big pub crawl, so that'll be nice.
Oh,
with some dear friends.
Oh, missed that one. Missed that memo. Track six now. And what you'll have the day after your pub crawl, Bad Head. And I might as well just grin and bear it, because it's not worth the trouble of an argument. And you not really stayed in touch. Well, I knew as much. It's no surprise.
Bad Head there. Now, Dan, question for you. Have you ever given or received a gift that you've ever regretted? No, only joking. Actually, I'm gonna shock you again. What a great time to talk about the fantastic album artwork.
I simply won't have this, Will. I refuse to let you. It's not possible.
Why?
This is one of my favourite songs on the album. You cannot do this to me. You cannot do this to me.
It's not, and this is the joy of two lads sitting down and butting heads with each other. At some point, we will blow, and yeah. Here it is. So it's difficult on an album like this for me because such a great reminder of my youth, but so many great songs on here as well. I have to put it in somewhere, and I'm putting it in here. This album cover, I know it's been said a lot in the past, over the last 5 years, but what an iconic album cover. This is two dogs, one muzzled, one free. And this was taken at Walthamstow Racetrack. And then you've got the classic, much-loved Blur logo and Park Life in a wonderfully retro, caps-locked font. You see this album and you don't think A Night at the Dogs, you just think Park Life, don't you? Brilliant shot and a wonderful piece of art to have on your wall or in your record collection.
Yeah, it's classic. Also worth noting, the image was... Sorry, to don't mean to correct you, Will, but I am pissed off with you now. I think both dogs have a muzzle on. The one, the brown dog's just is a little more subtle, perhaps. But the image wasn't taken for the cover. It was an image that already existed. I did have a note somewhere of who did that.
You're just deliberately being obtuse now, just because I've done this on your favourite track on the album.
One of. I did have a note written down of the photographer, and I've lost that post-it somewhere. So I'm sure he's listening. Congratulations,
Dan. Tell me though why you love this song. I'm really open to being turned round.
Well, I love the brass. The brass throughout this album is stunning. I love the backing ooze throughout it, and they get their own time to shine during the bridge or the middle eight. I think this song gives it, we talked before about how many different genres are across this album. This song brings a whole new flavor to the album, but then add to that the lyrics that are about a hangover and the anxiety that comes with it, or the hangxiety. It's just very relatable. And I just think it's a little bit of a breather as well. And in fact, well, I'm going to put my neck on the line here and say, I think this could have been a single, maybe single five, if there's going to be a fifth one. Now, I don't want it to come between us, Will, so let's move on to track seven and an instrumental. You can hear it playing beneath us now. Aforementioned, actually, because you did say Phil Daniels was going to recite a poem over this. They couldn't find the right one. He did Park Life and they left this as an instrumental. I love an instrumental on an album.
Yeah, it's a bit of a moment to breathe. Again, like the previous track, I think it sits really nicely with Bedhead. And also, I do think...
Badhead, it's called Will. Hate to correct you on my favourite song.
Bedhead. Sorry, Dan, I was just looking at you then for a minute and just popped into my head. It's almost like a slightly sinister tone to this, like a debt collector might have when he's knocking at your door. And sorry, I'm looking at you again there. Your mother with the K's catalogue. Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm really sorry, Mum. I was terrible for when I was a kind of late teens, early adult, ordering things from Freeman's and K's and saying, I'll pay you back, Mum, and never doing it. She probably knew I wasn't going to. I love the music of this. I think it's very, it sounds like something from a park fair in the 19th century or something like that. That's what I get. But then there is that sinister thing. And as you said, the debt collector, apparently the idea they had that it was quite a nasty piece of work. But now we just have to imagine it.
Track number eight now. It's another short one, Far Out. I spy in the night sky, don't I?
Out there, as you said, a shorty at just 1:38, and something a little bit different here again, because everything's a little bit different on this album, but a little bit different because the lyrics for this one written by Alex James, and it's also Alex singing this one.
It's very strange, slightly trippy, off-kilter number, which going into the second half of the album does kind of throw you off a little bit, because you almost know how it's going to go, but now you kind of think, well, actually, is this second half going to have a completely different tone to it altogether?
What I love is that, you know, a song like this, sometimes I think, who does this remind me of? What does this make me think of? Aside from fellow Britpop legend Brian Cox, of course, because of all the astronomy references, also this was likened to early Pink Floyd and like that Sid Barrett kind of lyricism and songwriting, which I can definitely pick up on. But what a fun song as well, Will.
Yeah, it's lighthearted, isn't it? You've got to enjoy it.
It's a nice break before we go into a run of some really great stuff. So let's go into it. Track nine, to the end. You and I.
To the end. So Damon's there talking about a relationship with Letitia Sadia, a French madame from French lady. I don't know if she's a madame or not.
Mademoiselle.
I guess the end of a relationship, trying to overcome actually the end, potential end of a relationship, a rough patch. Not something I don't think either of us have ever had to navigate.
No.
in our relationships, but luckily, definitely with each other, and not in a romantic way.
Hence the hiatus, actually.
But we're here now, all smiles
for the cameras.
Genuine smiles. This is just such a lovely track. And that chorus just really gets you in the, doesn't it? Absolutely wonderful. Orchestral. It could be, it wouldn't be out of place in a Bond.
Definitely hear that. A classic Bond. It's just so, once again, so different. It's so Baroque. It's so almost kind of maybe Motown, maybe a little bit Scott Walker in his earlier solo years. So smooth, so sophisticated. But then you've got Damon's vocal, that, you know, that Cockney charm, along with Letitia's vocal as well. It's just, it's so many things, this song. I absolutely adore this one. In fact, listening to the album a lot today, getting ready for the episode, I thought when I have a good sing-song in the shower, which I do like to have a good sing-song in the shower, I'll sing along to this. And God, it sounded awful, Will. That chorus was just horrendous. But anyway, enough about my singing, because Damon sounds great on this. Also, Will, there is a French version of the song with him lending his Cockney tongue to the French. And then there's also a re-recorded duet. So a year later, in 95, they released To the End, La Comédie, which was sang as a duet with François Hardy, I'm sure, who is an iconic French singer who rose to prominence in the 60s and worked with the likes of Serge Gainsbourg. And it's, if you haven't heard it, listeners, Will, anyone, it's stunning because they elongate it as well. It's about 5 minutes plus.
And if you're wondering, then yes, there is an accordion in this, and Stephen Haig is responsible. We can hold him responsible for the accordion.
Good. And this is the one track we said before he produced one of the songs. It's this one here. If you're listening to Track by Track for the first time ever, welcome. If you don't know who Stephen Haig is, he has produced the likes of Pet Shop Boys and Dubstar and many other bands that haven't been mentioned today so far. In fact, no, we haven't mentioned Dubstar, but another iconic Britpop band also to be likened to Saint Etienne and Pet Shop Boys.
And this was a single?
This was the second single to be released from the album, so quite the juxtaposition from Girls and Boys. But it was a top 20 hit in June of 94. Interestingly, this one entered the charts at 23 and then climbed to 16, so this is the only single from the album that climbed up the charts. So the week it peaked at number 16, the top 10 that week, Manchester United Football Squad at number 10 with Come On You Reds, Mariah Carey, a new entry at number 9 with Anytime You Need a Friend, Grid and Swamp Thing at number 8, Ace of Base with Don't Turn Around at number 7, Absolutely Fabulous by Absolutely Fabulous at number 6, Max with Getaway at 5, 4 is Prodigy with No Good, Start the Dance, 3 is Dawn Penn with You Don't Love Me, No, No, No.
No, No, No.
2 is Big Mountain, Baby, I Love Your Way, another one on Now 29, and number 1, Wet, 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 Love Is All Around. That bloody song.
Okay, track 10. London Love.
London Loves there. What I like about this, Will, again, something new. As soon as this starts, I almost thought it was quite Kraftwerkian with those very robotic, synthy sounds. Instinctively intrigued. And then some great plucky guitar coming in and sweeping me off my feet. And some hand claps.
I said plucky guitars when we were listening to the track. He stole on that from me.
Oh, I'll copy and paste my notes into the chat for you, Will. Everyone said plucky guitar.
It's like the most electronic we've heard them. But I don't think we talked about Graham Coxon's guitar enough in this episode, because I think his guitar work on this album is some of the best he's done with Blur. It's so sharp. It's so skillful. And I love the way it's totally different in this song, but still wonderful. I also love the message in this song that London isn't the nicest place in the world.
That's why you got away. You escaped.
I had to get away. They didn't want me to leave, but I went.
Just maybe trying to shine a positive light on that, Will, and look through some rose-tinted spectacles. When you were a Londoner, what did you love about it the most?
Oh, some very dear friends.
Oh. And now a couple of other quick London facts on the album. One, the album was originally going to be titled London. I don't think that was the band's decision. I think that was management or someone who had that. I did, again, I've lost all my notes. I've made so many notes this week, but I can't find them all. But they didn't want it to be called London. And apparently the idea was for like a market fruit and vegetable to be the front cover. I wonder if they were going to have Arthur Fowler stood next to it. That would have been quite nice.
Dan, I must try your approach to getting ready for an episode. Make loads of notes and then hide them from yourself.
Yes. That's actually not just for the track by track, but that's for life. I do that.
But lots of London connections. Obviously, the boys are from London. They met, informed in London. We've already talked about Walthamstow, the racetrack. I think this album was recorded in Fulham, West London. Lots of talk around parks. Hyde Park, we'd already mentioned. The country house, not country house, the park life video was filmed in Greenwich. There we go, just half a dozen there.
And Will, while you were banging on there, I've just found out that it was actually Dave Balfe. It was his idea and to call it London. And Damon said that was the last time he was sort of privy to any decision or creative process with us. And that was his final contribution, to call it London. And obviously he didn't get it. But also another London theme, the album's loose theme, obviously, which is London throughout, was inspired by the 1989 novel London Fields by Martin Amis. Will, we've both become quite the bookworms of late. Have you turned the pages of London Fields?
No, I haven't. I'm tempted to, because I'm always on the lookout for something new and something different to dive into.
Track 11 now. Trouble in the Message Centre.
Trouble in the massage centre there. Dan Ball turned over again. Bloody dirty devil.
It's not what the centre park staff expect, is it?
I love this. It's almost like a return to more kind of indie pop rock roots with Graham's thrashing guitar this time round. Not so plucky, more thrashy. And this is a real mind mess of a song, which then just kind of culminates in the kind of in these wonderful ooh ya ya ya's. Dan, I'd love to know a little bit more if you've fathomed it out around what this song is about.
Well, I think this song is about rave culture. It's about going out. It's about enjoying what is about. And the message center is the brain. And it's struggling. The trouble is that it's struggling with the aftermath. So lines about not remembering 10 minutes ago, or there's a quite a nice metaphor about a new typeface. And I think that tied in with how it kind of quite quickly swerves in style. I mean, what I love about this song, I think this is maybe the most interesting track on the album, because I think on the face of it, it's a rocky indie track, but actually it kicks off with that kind of B-movie sci-fi piano. And the bass and the drum and the guitar comes in and you think you know where it's going to go. It's a classic Blur song. Nothing wrong with that. Then the melody maybe wasn't quite what I expected. It swerved a little bit. The guitar kind of was more prominent than it was at the start. And then when the chorus kicks in, you've got kind of two styles to Damon's voice. And the ooh-ya-ya's, as you said. The ladies' ooh-ya-ya's. Or it might be the men, I'm not sure. But I think all of these different swerves in style and that half chorus coming in and going, I think that's all part of the after effects of the night out. It's meant to disorientate you.
And it certainly is. But at the same time, I just love losing myself in the madness of it. Like the night out itself.
Exactly. And there's a great live version on the deluxe edition of Park Life as well.
Ah, top tip. Dan's top tips. You're like that guy on the Stacey Solomon show that sellotapes a toilet brush to a screw to a power drill.
Thank you very much.
Okay, track number 12 now, Clover Over Dover. I'm on the white cliffs of
Glover of a Dover there, and some stunning harpsichord from Damon on this one. And not only that, some lovely organ punctuating the sound. Not such a stunning lyric per se, because this one is about suicide. Well, if I jump, it's all over, he says. Also there, Will, juxtaposing that, it takes influence from a dirty ditty called Roll Me Over in the Clover, which goes, roll me over, lay me down and do it again. Roll me over in the clover, roll me over, lay me down and do it again. And I thought that's really interesting because I've not heard of that before, that dirty ditty, but I want to know more. And according to a source, that song became popular in World War II and can be traced back to traditional pumping shanties, such as put your shoulder next to mine and pump away. And it might also be related to shove it home.
You're making these up now, aren't you?
No, actual historical research there.
It just writes itself, doesn't it, sometimes, the content for this podcast. I really love the kind of medieval feel to this track, which is definitely Damon's harpsichord, which makes it feel a bit oldie-worldy. And it does fit with the Kent countryside, doesn't it?
Mm.
Dark content alert.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and as I said, juxtaposed. I feel like because we haven't recorded for a long time, I haven't said juxtaposed for a while or juxtaposition, so I'm just saying it about 10 times per episode at the minute. Apologies for that. But it is juxtaposed with the fact that it is a really lovely, jaunty tune. And another fun fact about this one, Will, for a long time, this was the only song from the album that hadn't been played live. But then in 2019, at one of Damon's Africa Express gigs, the other lads joined him on stage and played it.
Wow, I wonder what of all the songs they could have done, I wonder what made them go to this one.
And they did a couple of the hits as well, and then this. They did two or three songs. So not a huge set list, but this was one of them. Moving on then, track 13, Magic America. Care how you feel. La, 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 la. He wants to go to Magic America. La, 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 la. He likes to live in Magic America. With all the magic people.
Magic America. Here, there, everywhere. Now, this is... just remind me a little bit of some of their older sounds. It's got more of a groove to it. Also reminds... It also makes me think, and I don't know why, I don't know if this is intentional, that Damon's channeling a bit of David Bowie.
Oh, I'm really glad you mentioned his name, because when I was singing along in the shower earlier, his... And it might have been singing...
David Bowie slipped out.
Yes, of me. And I did think, oh, I must note his name down because he's obviously an influence on a lot of this. So, yes, I hear that. Also, I've been hearing his name a lot because on all the Pet Shop Boys documentaries doing the rounds at the minute, on the Imagine documentary and on the podcast that Neil was on, he told the same story. I'm not saying he repeats himself. You know, he's got lots of stories that he likes to share. He talks about when they did Hello, Space Boy, and they were recording with David Bowie, and David said, what voice do you want? And Neil said, Cockney. And then he did his David Bowie Cockney voice, which he very much does on that song. Hello, Space Boy.
I love the idea about choose the David Bowie that you want and he will manifest. I like this idea that Blur aren't quite sure about America. And is it a great thing? Is it magic? Is it not? And I guess it's funny that this album, although there are a lot of Blur fans and there became a lot of Blur fans in America, I guess this album didn't connect particularly well with US audiences, probably for some obvious reasons, a lot of which we've talked about because of the themes and the references on it. But again, this track feels more accessible because it is a more classically structured, delivered and guitar featured track.
Yeah, it definitely does. I also really like those kind of circus sounds that swirl in the background. Do I mean circus sounds? Kind of like whirl, it's a kind of fairground noises.
Fur ground sounds,
Furry's ground. But I love the idea that with this, and this is such a quintessentially British album, and now we're hearing about Bill Barrett. Do you know him well, Bill Barrett?
No, is he a friend or neighbour of yours?
Well, he's off to the States. He's had enough of this shithole, and he's talking about America. And so with this song, we're hearing American observations rather than the British kind of London ones, but through the lens of a British person. Ever been interested in Magic America, Will, but moving over there, emigrating?
No, I enjoy my semi-sporadic frequent trips over. That's enough. That's enough.
Yeah. And hello to all of our American listeners. And thanks for having us from time to time.
Track 14 now, Jubilee. Jubilee's dad, Billy Banker, makes his sons a slow.
Not an ode to the Royals, as you might be thinking. Jubilee, much like Tracy Jacks and Bill Barrett, Jubilee is another character here. And his dad, Billy Banker, gets a look in too. His dad sounds like either a Cockney rhyming slang or a children's book character.
And we talked about this album didn't set the world on fire in America. Although then, coincidentally, now the next track after we've said that sounds like something that would set the radio on fire in America, because it could be a very classic pop rock track that you would hear on America FM.
Yeah, a bit punkier. I really love in this one the computer game sounds. Absolutely adore them and how they work hand in hand with the brass that's blasting through it as well. Very clever.
A lot of sound effects on this album.
Yes, and I do believe that's Stephen Street. He loves to play around with those. This Jubilee character slouches, losing the will to move, watches 24 hours of rubbish, antisocial, not going to cut his hair. How are you, Will Lovely? I've been meaning to ask all episode, actually.
Oh, fuck off. A bit tetchy at the end of this, towards the end of this episode, actually.
It's quite a long album, isn't it? Track 15 now, and this is Alone. This is Alone.
This is Alone, Dan, has one of the best choruses on the album and probably the best delivered chorus by Albarn, with that wonderful vocal making it such a whimsical, melancholic delivery that the Pet Shop Boys would be proud of. But this is Alone. Weather is very much the theme. You can hear that in the lyrics. You can hear that with the snippets as well.
Yeah. This is an absolute all-time Blur high for me. This is, it's absolutely stunning. I adore this song. And I think this is one of those wonderful moments where I heard it live before I really knew it.
Oh.
And fell in love with it live. And that's how I got into this song. But the story about it is great as well. As you said, Weather, it's based on this idea that the band used to listen to the shipping forecast when they felt homesick, when they were on tour, if they were hungover, they find it quite calming.
And it is. It's so comforting. It's so, again, there's something so British about it. Ooh, sit my nose then. on the microphone, on the spit guard. There's something so British, comforting, familiar about the shipping forecast. And hardly ever get to hear it anymore. I might put it on later. I'm sure it's on YouTube to listen to. But lovely. It is one, it's very grounding, very centering, I find. And I love that fact about them putting it on when they're on tour, when they're homesick. I said this should be the last track on the album because it has that monumental, like that epicness about it. And this has often been the last track that they would play at the end of a show as well.
Yeah.
Which, because it does feel like a moment, a huge moment.
Yeah, it's haunting, I think, this song. I absolutely love it. Also, as well as Damon's incredible vocal, you've got Graham's phenomenal guitar. For me, this is the song where that really comes alive. And I think this song actually started out as an instrumental with various guitar solos from Graham, really playing up to the distortion. And then Damon was going into hospital. He had a hernia operation to get to, and he knew how to write a lyric. And Alex had bought, for Christmas, he'd bought him a handkerchief with the shipping forecast on it. So he used that as reference for this. Isn't that lovely?
Bless. Yeah.
And he said he already had the lyric, the opening lyric, "And into the sea goes pretty England and me." And then the rest of it he just made work using those locations, Dogger Bank, Bay of Biscay, and making it work with those quintessentially back for tea and the taxi rank and all that up the Thames. It's just, it's an all-time favourite for me. And released as a promotional single, but not a single. I think Damon's right. This should have been a single.
It's one of those songs where if someone said to you, "Play me a song that you love of Blur's so I could love them and appreciate them," you need to remember to go to this one, not Song 2 or Park Life or There's No Other Way or Country House, because this is a brilliant showcase for a band. And I must say this, I keep forgetting everything, but this song coming in at the end of the album, where a make or break album where they really wanted to do something that was a big success, is almost like the moment to think they've arrived, they've properly arrived, and this is the track that showcases that. It is almost a shame we have a little ditty on the end of the album, but it's the 16th track.
It's playing now beneath us, lot 105, and yeah, it's a fun little outro. The one thing I like about it is that it merges the sounds of the album together. You get a lot of everything in there, but I do agree that This Is a Low is so phenomenal, it should have closed the show.
And lot 105, this is also the other time that I would mention St Etienne as well as the familiar feel to it.
Yeah.
Well, now this album, Dan, what an album. It's been one of our longer ones, definitely. But I think, was this the make or break success that they wanted it to be? It absolutely was, in terms of, you know, five great singles, but also the reviews. The big names in the music press in the UK at the time: NME, 9 out of 10, Q, 4 out of 5, Select, 5 out of 5, and many other reviews and publications. Just super positive about this album. And it's one of those albums that will appear in those best albums lists of whatever time, whatever century or whatever genre for years to come. You know, it was also a huge commercial success. Number one in the UK album chart. It was a fantastic success.
Yeah.
And then from there, off they went.
And the one I did say, Will, that I was going to mention M People again. And the reason is because this album was nominated for the 1994 Mercury Prize, but it lost out to M People's Elegant Slumming.
We need to get that album on the long list. We still have a long list, and it's still long, so let's put it on there.
Yeah. Also, just a correction for myself before anyone writes in. Dave Borf, who I mentioned before, he was the owner of Food Records, who Blur was signed to, and he later sold Food to EMI. Sold Food Records to EMI, not sandwiches.
Oh, he got his and got his house in the country.
Yes. So
further listening.
Yes, so much to choose from, because as you said, they were very generous, like Pet Shop Boys, like St Etienne, very generous with B-sides throughout this campaign. Will, I'd love for you to go first, actually.
Thank you very much, Dan. And I am going with a B-side from Girls and Boys. It's also on the special edition of Park Life. This is what I feel is a good bedfellow to girls and boys. This is People in Europe. Say, Dan, this didn't go down well with everyone, and there were definitely some mentions of xenophobia off the back of it as well, such as the fast and loose playing with some of the languages and words in there. But I was allured in by the beat, by the great bass running through it, and just again a slightly different sound and approach, in the same way that Girls and Boys was. But also themes around Brits abroad, definitely the shared narrative there. Yes. So, what do you think?
Love it. And actually, this was very nearly my further listening choice as well, for all the reasons you said. I also love the fact that this was on one of the B-sides for Girls and Boys, so they really were pushing this new, dancier sound. I just think it's a perfect example of a B-side. It's influenced by the new sound. Mm. It maybe was an early version of that track or something like that. But also, in the best possible way, what a fun song.
Yes, what a fun song. But it's not for everyone. Dan, what have you gone for?
So, Will, I have gone for Girls and Boys. It's something else from that single release. Well, depending on where you got it and when. But Pet Shop Boys released a remix of this. They remixed the track. They performed it live, as we said earlier in the episode. And a little bit of a tidbit for listeners, actually. It's nice to be talking about Pet Shop Boys this week. We actually did hope to be talking about their brand new album and going track by track through it. We weren't able to get an advance stream of it, so we weren't able to get the episode to you in time. So I'm sure we'll go track by track through that at one point, Will, but for now, for this week, Pet Shop Boys are on Track by Track, a remix of Girls and Boys. Pet Shop Boys remix there, a match made in heaven. There's little else to say than what the music has already said. It just sounds so good together. I love the Pet Shop Boys live version of it as well from their Discovery Tour. But one thing I will say, and one thing that I learned from researching this week, is that in 1996, Piano Man, a Bradford-based dance music producer, released a track called Blurred, which was it was a dance track sampling Girls and Boys by Blur, but it also featured parts of the Pet Shop Boys remix. Will, what do you think to it?
I love it. That 90s dance beat running through it. Pet Shop Boys always on their finger of what is good music, what is currently hot in music and dance music. And I love the fact Pet Shop Boys and Blur coming together to do that. Feels like it's a match made in heaven. It's also just such a 90s thing to happen at the time as well. And it's great fun. And it totally suits that track. And I'd imagine that was played to death in the clubs in Spain and Greece that summer as well.
Oh, to have been there.
We're
out of time.
Out of time. Park life for you there.
I have to say, no disrespect to Pet Shop Boys ever, but kind of worked out all well in the end, didn't it? Because we wouldn't have done this album this week, and I've thoroughly enjoyed going track by track through that one.
Yeah, it's been brilliant, hasn't it? I'd love to know your memories, not yours, Dan, our listeners' memories.
I've just shared them. Sorry.
Of the Park Life era. But also, where should we go next with Blur? Let us know what you think at Track by Track UK.
And we love getting your reviews. We'd love to read more out on our next recording. So please do head to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. But I think Apple Podcast might be the best place for written reviews to let us know what you think to this episode and everything else on Track by Track.
And Dan, we're doing this again, so I'm going to ask you, can you give us a hint of a tease as to what's coming up next if you're listening at time of release?
So next up, it's one of our ex-patron episodes, which is going to get a new lease of life. We are talking about an iconic girl band as they head out on tour for the first time in a few years.
Well, thank you for joining us for this Blur Odyssey. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing a rating and a review in advance. Until next time.
I've been a Billy Banker.
And I've been the debt collector. So pay up, Dan, or else.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Although, actually, I did get a review sent to my inbox, to my personal one, not the Track by Track one. I don't know why, but it was addressed to you, weirdly. And it said, "Will, you make my whole week." Although there's no comma there, so. Actually, no, maybe that wasn't a review for the podcast. Hang on a minute. No. What's great about it is it's very raucous. I can't imagine the Kinks or Ray Davies doing it because it's more sound effects on this one than a 2021 episode of Track by Track.
That's a great reference, your point.